All right. The last few people are making their way in and taking a seat. I think we'll get started. It looks like it's about past 4:15. So we have a little bit of stuff to get through today. But before we do that, I'd just like to say thanks for coming along. My name's Chris Johnson, and today we're going to be talking about the web application proxy. So first, quick sort of straw poll, hands up. Anybody who's heard about the web application proxy? Anybody deployed it? Few people? Half and half. Excellent. All right. So it's really an overview session today. We're going to look at a couple of examples of it in action with SharePoint. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about some related technologies as well and how they work together with the web application proxy. But first, a little bit about myself. I sound funny. I'm from New Zealand. The thing at the bottom left of the slide there is a bird called a kiwi. So if I refer to myself as a kiwi, I'm not talking about fuzzy brown fruit. I'm talking about our native bird of New Zealand. I blog at looselytyped.net, and you can find me on Twitter at loungeflyz or z. And so feel free to get in touch. I like to run these sessions relatively informal, so if you feel free to throw your hand up and yell out a question or come to the mic as we go through, feel free to interrupt. I used to work at Microsoft a couple of years ago. I left. Before that, I was on the SharePoint team. And now I work at a company called Provoke Solutions. We're a system integrator in Bellevue up in Seattle, and we have offices in a couple of different places around the world, like New Zealand and the Philippines. So what are we going to cover? Well, first, we're going to spend a little bit of time recapping kind of what are our remote access options for SharePoint today. What are people currently doing? What are the popular ones? What are the not-so-popular ones? Then we're going to move on to talking about some of the challenges that we face with getting access to SharePoint remotely while people are out of the office, and what some of those challenges are, and currently what some of the options are for dealing with those challenges. Then we're really going to get into the meat of the web application proxy in Windows Server 2012 R2. And talk about it in a little bit more depth. I'm also going to walk through showing you some examples of how you go and install it, a little bit on configuration, and then also a little bit on reverse publishing or proxying SharePoint out to the universe. And then we're going to get onto an interesting topic at the end as well about device authentication. So not only making users sign in using a regular username and password, for example, or some other maybe a token-based system, for example, but also dealing with some of the challenges around BYOD and how you manage the devices that people want to access your stuff in your enterprise using and taking advantage of some new features that work really well with web application proxy to help do that. So we'll do that a little later in the session. So first up, remote access. I mean, I think hands up, a quick sort of hands up on who offers or whose organizations offer the ability to access their internal SharePoint sites from outside of the firewall in any sort of shape or form, whether it be through VPN or reverse proxy or what have you. Okay, so a really good proportion. Hands up, people who are pretty anti this access. Anybody willing to put their name to that? No? Okay. I know there's a few of you out there. Banks, for example, and things get a little bit tetchy about people getting access to information that they shouldn't necessarily get access to while they're out of the office and have a few problems with that. So some of these things that we're talking about today should hopefully help with that a little bit. But it's becoming more important than ever. I like to be able to work from wherever I happen to be. I just came back from a holiday back to the motherland, so to speak, New Zealand, to visit family. And I like to be able to sit with my Surface in a cafe in Queenstown in the South Island of New Zealand and get my email, for example. I think that's the most common scenario for people today. But also, I filled in an expense claim. I went and got some documents from our SharePoint site. I used some internal line of business systems for doing project management and so forth while I was there as well. And we used Direct Access to do that. But some organizations use lots of other different types of technologies to do that as well, and it's becoming more and more important that you offer these options for users so that they can work anywhere they happen to be at any time. I saw a little study, or it was apparently a reasonably large study, but I read a small write-up about that study that's saying now 10% of people in the US are working from home roughly around 1 day a week, and then about 4.5 all the time, which struck me as, I don't know, maybe it's just I haven't looked at these statistics for a long time, but it struck me as being pretty big, really, when you think about how many people are working just within the US and how many people must be sitting at home in their office location or on their couch or wherever it happens to be. Getting access to their information to do their job remotely is obviously extraordinarily important. And even if you don't make a habit of working from home all the time, obviously there's those one-off situations, you know, we're all in, you know, one shape or form in the technology business. Might be a server down, for example, or somebody needs your help with some sort of final proposal or something like that. And if you don't have access to the systems that you need when you need them, it obviously creates all sorts of havoc. So around office locations is one part of it, but also disaster management. A wee while back, there was a rather large earthquake in Christchurch in New Zealand, and it pretty much wiped out the entire central business district of the city and displaced thousands and thousands of workers. And the businesses that really did, I would say, reasonably well out of the whole ordeal. Obviously, they all had a terrible time, and I'm not trying to make light of that, but certainly the ones that did okay during it were well set up from an IT perspective for their employees to be able to work from home, or these temporary office locations that started springing up around the city, like in shipping containers and tents and all sorts of things like that. So it's not just, you know, giving your employees the option to work from wherever they want and, you know, slack off on the couch with the TV on, but also for when those one-off situations arise, like earthquakes and such like as well. Also, I mentioned, you know, in the agenda that I'd cover a little bit about BYOD and bringing your own devices to work and things like that, and obviously that's a huge trend going on at the moment that we need to be able to support. So we'll talk a little bit about how we can do that in a safe manner. At the end of that study that I read, it basically said employees are happier and more satisfied if they're able to choose how and where they work. Obviously, it's becoming a differentiator in the marketplace about where people choose to go and work based on their IT systems and how modern or not modern they are and what flexibility their employers give them. So it's obviously, you know, extremely important. But some businesses have some challenges with remote access. First and foremost, the risk associated with opening up more ways to get access to things inside your organization means that there is an inherent associated risk along with that. And many IT organizations would say that it's harder to manage, or they struggle with managing all of these different ways of employees getting access. And so some are not that keen. They want to shut those avenues down, or they don't want to open them up as much as they could. Some have a issue with trusting users to do the right thing and not give out their username and password to somebody that calls them that says they're from Microsoft and they need to patch their computer, for example. So it's obviously a slightly more risky proposition opening things up, but done in the right way, I think we can mitigate and manage that risk. Data loss is obviously a huge other one. You let devices out of your organization and they wander off and onto bar stools and pubs and things like that happen, or laptops on trains and cabs and all those sorts of things. And these are, again, additional concerns that people have. And then finally, just from a security perspective, you know, more holes means more ways in, means more things you have to protect. And so being able to tie all these things together in a nice, secure manner is obviously top of the priority list if we're going to talk about any of these subjects with organizations. So what are people doing today? Well, I think, you know, a quick set of hands went up around who offers remote access to information inside the organization. But a quick hands up on who only offers VPN as the only option for remote access. It's probably, I'd say, maybe 25%, maybe a little less, 20%, something like that. Anybody deployed direct access? Does anybody know what direct access is? Yes, good. Ooh, that's pretty cool. So direct access is Very similar to a VPN, except you don't need user involvement necessarily. Whereas a VPN, it's usually user-initiated. They log in with a username and password or a key fob or token or something along those lines. Maybe certificates are involved, and then they get access. Whereas direct access is baked into the Windows platform, and you can deploy it, and it allows basically a VPN without necessarily users having to do a whole lot of work to initiate it. Just sort of magically happens. It deals with things like sending the right traffic over the internet connection and the right traffic down the direct access pipe to the organization. So it's kind of, in a way, smart tunneling. And then, obviously, reverse proxies. Who's got a reverse stuff published out? Excellent. Keep hands up if you're using UAG. Interesting. Quite a few. All right. We'll talk about that in a minute. So reverse proxies, if you've come not knowing what a reverse proxy is, it's basically the ability to take something inside your organization and use a tool to help publish it externally without necessarily moving the server, obviously, and have some sort of, for want of a better word, man in the middle doing the brokering between the inside and the outside world. And usually those reverse proxies are in the DMZ of the organization. Sometimes user authentication is terminated at them. Sometimes SSL is terminated at them, those sorts of things. I would say probably, VPN is, I think in our poll, was the most popular by the looks of it, and that's, I think, typically because it's been kind of the most widely adopted for the longest period of time. Reverse proxies looked like it was in second place there in direct access. I was actually quite surprised how many people had deployed direct access, because I know Microsoft heavily use it, and at Provoke Solutions we have it deployed, and it's great, but not a lot of people know about it. So, from reverse proxy standpoint, Microsoft's story to this point has mostly revolved around Unified Access Gateway, or Forefront Unified Access Gateway, UAG for short. It's a reverse proxy amongst other things, so it does a variety of things. However, the piece that I'm going to talk about today is how it relates to reverse proxying things out to the internet. So typically, in a very basic, high-level, sort of 50,000-foot view, you've got UAG that sits between your people out on the internet, signaled by the phone there, and SharePoint, say, on the intranet or some other system that you want to get access to. And so it sits between there and brokers the communication between the two. It can also do things like authentication at the boundary, so that when a user hits the site, they're prompted to enter their credentials before they continue. And then and only then will the rest of the requests and responses come back and forth, and you've got access to SharePoint. UAG also has a really nifty feature called Forms to NTLM Translation or Transition, which basically means you can enter a username and a password in a text box, and UAG will authenticate against Active Directory for you and then impersonate you using NTLM inside the organization to SharePoint. Now, the nice bit about that is that it doesn't require any configuration changes from an authentication perspective in SharePoint. So if you're already authenticating against SharePoint using NTLM, then that works pretty well. And you don't need to sort of set up forms on your SharePoint, forms auth on your SharePoint environment or some sort of other authentication mechanism. It can be done with the same auth system as you would normally use inside the organization. Right. So how that used to look is, here's a screenshot out of an old UAG box I had. It's fairly straightforward. I've set up a rule here that basically says for spwp7.contoso.com, which is kind of up in that top left text box called public hostname, that's what I want it listening on, and I want to pipe it through to an internal site. And so I've got that set up over on the right-hand side there. And you set up the port, you say which port you want it on and so forth, and you're pretty much good to go. Now, what that looks like when somebody uses this, when they hit it for the first time, is they're prompted to log in. And so this is, where I mentioned entering your Active Directory username and credentials, password. You would do that here, and then in the background, UAG is going to take those, log into AD for you, get your NTLM auth all set up, and then you can continue the work with SharePoint and carry on. And for the last few years, that's all been rosy, but not too long ago, there was a roadmap change for UAG, where Microsoft announced that the current version of UAG would be, and TMG would be, the last version that was shipped. And so coming up in April 14, 2015, so give or take roughly a year from now, mainstream support for UAG will finish. Now, what that means is basically Microsoft will stop patching it for mainstream support. If you want to pay to get extended support, it'll go through, they'll do it up to 2020. But as I understand it, extended support is not something for everybody necessarily and costs to do. So in about a year's time, all those UAG boxes out there in the world will probably need ripping and replacing sometime between now and then. There's an announcement link. I'm obviously not expecting you to jot this one down. It'll be in the deck for you to download and click on and read all about the roadmap changes for UAG if you're so inclined. But so the nuts and the bolts of it are, in a year's time, Microsoft will stop supporting it unless you buy extended support. So that's obviously got a few people upset because there's a bunch of this deployed. And so hopefully, in the rest of the session, we'll talk a little bit about what some of the options are going forward. From a Microsoft standpoint, obviously, there are lots of different solutions for reverse proxies out there in the world from other vendors and so forth, but I'm just going to be focusing on the stuff that's coming in or has come in Windows Server. So there's a couple of issues that people strike with reverse proxies today, and also how it relates to publishing SharePoint out to the world. So things like URL rewriting on the fly, if you've got a website on, http://intranet internally, and you want to publish it at, https://intranet.contoso.com, then you've got to make sure all the links work. And that's quite a complicated process. And some reverse proxies do a terrible job at it, and others do not a bad job at it. And SharePoint doesn't deal well with you fiddling with its URLs too much. Reverse proxying and publishing SharePoint and doing URL rewriting on the fly, you need a good reverse proxy to do it well. Not just SharePoint, but lots of other systems may not necessarily deal well with it. Things like URLs and JavaScript, trying to catch all of the little edge cases where these things might crop up is quite a complicated business. Other things people deal with are authentication at the boundary, or whether you want to do pass-through authentication, whether you want to say SharePoint's responsible for authenticating the user, or the box at the boundary is responsible for authenticating the user. That's another choice that people have to make as part of their architecture and design, and often is a challenge with various, not all, but some reverse proxy techniques and the types of authentication they support. SSL termination is another one. Where do you terminate your SSL and doing it efficiently and so forth, those sorts of things. So SharePoint supports this concept called alternative access mappings. I'm sure the majority of you are aware of this. SharePoint lets you serve the same content on different URLs using alternative access mappings because it's picky about trying to do some other party doing the rewriting of URLs and all that sort of stuff. And so as we go through this, you'll see with the web application proxy, we rely pretty heavily on SharePoint's alternate access mapping technology to be serving links and navigation elements and all of those sorts of things using alternative access mappings so that it doesn't get its doesn't go haywire and we miss a few links and things start breaking. So what are Microsoft going to do with UAG and in terms of replacing some of the functionality that it provides? So the first step, or the first thing I should note, is that there is no like-for-like replacement for UAG from Microsoft. I think that's the long and the short hard reality moving forward. And so UAG provides a number of different features and functionality, And I think what you'll see from Microsoft is a slow and steady replacement of pieces of that moving forward. The first one of those is to do with reverse proxying. And some of the features we'll look at today are fairly standard reverse proxy features. They're fairly basic in its first iteration. But going forward, I think we'll start seeing that get more and more robust and with more pieces of the UAG puzzle being replaced. But there is no like-for-like product replacement just yet. So what do we have in Windows Server 2012 R2? So the Web Application Proxy, or the WAP, is a basic reverse proxy technology. It's deployed as a role in Windows Server 2012 R2. It integrates with ADFS, and in fact, it relies on ADFS. So, or is it, I should say, dependent on ADFS. So if you're going to deploy this in your organization, it's probably going to either go hand in hand with ADFS or be not long after you do your ADFS rollout. Like I said, it's a start for a reverse proxy built into the server, but not a full and a fully featured replacement for UAG. It also can leverage some additional things that ADFS provides. We're going to look at something later called Workplace Join for device authentication and with multi-factor authentication that's available there as well. We'll take a look at that a little later on. Out of the box, it works with a number of different authentication systems, web-based apps for that are claims aware, can work well with us and have a personality or that person's identity passed through to them in a meaningful way from ultimately from ADFS. Office forms-based auth, or the standard or the protocol is MS-OFBA. O is Office, FBA is forms-based auth. Now this is what some of the Office clients use to authenticate with things like Office 365, for example, and can also against SharePoint. Out of the box too. Modern apps, say for example, apps deployed on a Windows 8 tablet device, for example, OAuth is a common, if you're not familiar with OAuth, it's a common protocol for authenticating and authorizing against a particular system. And also it can do NTLM and basic auth in what's called pass-through mode. And so basically the web application proxy, the two choices that you get for how a user authenticates against a system really boil down to two things. The first is, do you want to authenticate that person at the boundary? And if you do want to authenticate that person at the boundary, send them to ADFS to authenticate. That's the boundary auth option. The other option is to pass through authentication. So instead of the web application proxy saying, you're not authorized, I'm going to send you to ADFS, it just lets them through and hits the SharePoint box in this case. And then whatever authentication SharePoint's set up for, it takes care of that with the user as opposed to the web app proxy getting in the way. So the two options, boundary auth or pass through. That's really the two choices you get there. And I'll show you that in some of the slides as we walk through them. Okay. So, what can you do with this? I'll let this slide build because it gets kind of funky and complicated. Hold on. There we go. Right, so the web application proxy sits in the same location that your UAG server would have. It's obviously between your outside universe or users that are using their devices and apps and want to get access to your data. And it sits between there and the inside world. Integrates with ADFS up in the top-hand left corner there for authentication and also some authorization, and we'll talk about that as I go through and show you some of the setup. And it can also operate in that pass-through mode back to systems that do their own internal auth system, maybe forms authentication, for example, or something along those lines. Maybe they integrate with Active Directory behind the scenes to do NTLM auth or something like that. For apps where you're going to use the ADFS to do the authentication at the boundary, the claims that are for that user or given for that user can be consumed by the apps internally, and SharePoint, an example of one of those is obviously SharePoint. It could be a custom line of business application that's claims aware as well, could consume those claims and decide who that person is and what they can do based on those claims. So those can all be passed through as well. So setting up the web application proxy, it's a role, it's like I mentioned earlier on, it's a role in Windows Server 2012 R2. You'll see it under the remote access in the roles list. So you can see there, it's a little hard to read, but because it's grayed out because I already installed it, called web application proxy. As part of this, I don't have screenshots for each step of this, but when you install it for the first time, the web application proxy, it'll take you through a short wizard. You basically have to say, this is where my ADFS server lives. You know, here's the name of it and so forth to get that connection between the two set up. Now, once you've installed it, you have to go through and set up publishing your applications. So in this case, I'm going to jump over to a demo box in a moment and show you this. This is just a screenshot. But here we've got ADFS, we've got RMS, we've got SharePoint, and we've got work folders published out. So let me switch to, if the internet gods are with me, I'll be able to remote into a machine that I've already got set up. Okay, so that is number 3. Right on. Okay, so this is a WAP box running up in Azure. I have a big demo rig running up there with ADFS and SharePoint farm running in it, amongst a whole bunch of other things. So let's go take a look at the configuration of the web app proxy. So from Server Manager, you can go get that from the Tools menu. Where are we at? Remote Access Management is the one you want. So you fire that up. We'll be able to see my current configuration. I'm already publishing SharePoint externally. So if anybody wants to hit this off their laptop, you can try going to sharepoint.contosodemo.com. And you should get my login page, just so you know there's no sneaky cards up my sleeve or anything like that. So here we have the management console for the web application proxy, and you can see I've got a couple here defined. Let's go take a look at SharePoint. It's fairly straightforward. There's a few steps to the process, but the first step is pre-authentication. And so here I'm saying I just want to pass through the auth through to SharePoint, but I equally could have said I want to set it up to send off to ADFS and pre-authenticate them first. When I was doing this, I was just doing it for simplicity. I already have SharePoint up in the cloud that already points to my ADFS box anyway, so I'm just letting the web application proxy pass it through. It's not probably what you'd do in prod, obviously, but for my purposes, it was sufficient. And so then the next step of the wizard here is basically saying, what do you want to call the thing? And what's the external URL and what's the internal URL for the system that you want to publish? And what certificate do you want to do it on? Now, some of the people in the audience might be wondering, well, what happens if they're different? And I mentioned that URL rewriting was a common issue for publishing SharePoint externally. So if I just change the backend server thing here for a sec. You'll notice a little warning up the top here. I can't zoom in, sorry. It says the internal and external URLs don't match. This might cause access problems. If I've ever seen an error message more simplified in my life, that has to be it. So basically what this is saying is that you've got a different URL on the outside than you do on the inside. And the reason that it's warning you is it's not that it's it may not be a major issue, depending on the application. And SharePoint is one of those applications where it will be a major issue. So what web application proxy does do is it will rewrite header values only. So we could go forward like this, and we'd probably get to a SharePoint page. However, what came back from that SharePoint page, all the links and things and the JavaScript and then various navigation elements, won't have been rewritten unless SharePoint alternate access mapping is set up properly. But if you were just hitting your standard internal URL, then the links you'd get back would still be http://intranet, which is obviously not going to work when the person clicks on a link and tries to go to a site or something like that. So the rule or the takeaway there is that the web application proxy doesn't do URL rewriting. And so in SharePoint's case, we need to use alternative access mappings, and we need to make sure that the server address that's set up in the web application proxy here for the backend server is something SharePoint is expecting, and you've got alternative access mapping set up for so that it rewrites or puts the URLs on the page in the with the correct URL so that external users, when they click the link, will still come back through the web application proxy. For pass-through, that's pretty much it. It gives you a little PowerShell snippet at the end that you can keep for safekeeping and do through a command line if you want. I'm just going to back up a little bit here and show you what it looks like for if we choose Active Directory or ADFS for pre-authentication. Really, it's very similar. There's only one additional step. We have to pick the relying party on where you want to send that person to go authenticate. So, what they're going to authenticate against, effectively. It's pulling this list up in the top right-hand corner here. It's hard to read. I'm sorry I can't zoom here, but it says adfs.contosodemo.com. It says connected to ADFS, and then it gives you that address. That's the ADFS address that I specified when I was setting up the web application proxy. And it's reached out to that system and pulled a list of relying parties back, and that's how it built this list. Right, so I've already done this, so I'm not going to screw up my configuration. So let's jump back to here. Hold on. I'm going to switch to a slightly different machine here and show you a little demo of what this looks like. Number 7. Okay. So what I was showing you before was just an RDP into a box I've got running in Azure, remote desktop into Azure. This machine is a Surface RT device, which I'll be doing some of the demos from. And so that will become clear a little later on about why I want to use a Windows 8.1 RT device. So what I want to do here is jump over into the desktop. Can you see my fingerprint? Oh, okay. And I want to open IE, and I'm just going to hit SharePoint.contosodemo.com, HTTPS. And we should get my little sign-in page here set up. So what's happened is I've gone to hit SharePoint.contosodemo.com. It's hit the web application proxy. It sent the request through to SharePoint because I'm using the pass-through authentication option. SharePoint said, hey, you're not authenticated. And I need to send you off to ADFS to authenticate. So it's redirected me over there, and this is my ADFS login page. So what I'm going to do here is log in. Make sure I get the password right. And when I hit sign in, I'm going to be authenticated against Active Directory. I'm going to be given my claims and so forth. I'm going to be redirected back to SharePoint, and I'm going to end up hitting my SharePoint site. So this is probably the most simple example of publishing SharePoint. Internally, that SharePoint farm is set up with alternative access mappings to serve URLs on SharePoint.contosodemo.com. so that I don't need to deal with any URL rewriting and that sort of thing. And I've also set up pass-through auth, so that's sort of the base case, for want of a better word. I could have equally have pointed them at ADFS for boundary auth. I already have ADFS set up, and the SharePoint site's already talking to it anyway, so I could have made the web application proxy do that too. In this case, I just had it sort of set up this way, so SharePoint was using ADFS anyway. Great, so now we've got the kind of the most base case for SharePoint publishing using the web application proxy. So let me skip ahead here. Okay. So it's one thing to let users get access to your internal stuff, and it's another thing to do it securely, and it's another thing to ensure that only the right people get access to it and in a secure manner. So user access is obviously one thing that most people think about in terms of remote access. Who has access to this particular thing? You know, which accounts or which users have access to these different applications and so forth? And that's pretty much how most people think of user access today. It could get a little more complicated. It could be some sort of claims-based user access that say maybe you add some user claim support to say that the last name has to be Johnson to be let in. If you're using claims to build rules about who's allowed access to a system, for example. But that's pretty much as sophisticated as those sorts of rules get. And then stepping it up a notch, being able to control devices in this sort of multi-device world where you're not entirely sure what users are bringing into your organization or expecting to be able to use, whether that be, say, their employee-supplied phone or maybe a desktop computer at home or maybe a Surface RT device or something along those lines, tablets, obviously, iOS devices. There's a whole plethora of these kinds of things. And so this is obviously becoming a larger and larger problem, not only from a risk and security point of view, but also just from a support point of view, right? Making sure that the applications internally are able to run, all those line of business systems that rely on IE6 that you've still got, you know who you are, will run on all these different devices and things like that is obviously another huge issue that that organizations are facing today. So it's not just about security, but it's also about support of all these different types of devices. And so folks are starting to think about, well, for the last 20 years I've done user-based access, and now I need to not only think about that, but I also need to think about device access and the combination of both of those together. So it's more than just vanilla user access these days. So, how do you safely support the plethora of devices in the modern workplace? Well, there's another new technology that's come out in recent months. Anybody recall off the top of their head when Windows Server 2012 R2 released? It wasn't that long ago. Sorry? October? Yeah, a few months back now. So there's another technology that we're going to talk about today to help do this device authentication called Workplace Join. Hands up, anybody who's heard of it? A bunch? A few? Yep, okay. So Workplace Join, for those who don't know what it is, there were quite a few hands that didn't go up. It's kind of like a lightweight domain join. So in an organization, you join your PC to the domain. You might get some certs down. You might get some policies, all of that sort of stuff. Workplace Join is kind of like Active Directory Join or AD Join, except for people's other devices, stuff that isn't necessarily a corporate asset potentially or is not necessarily inside organization the whole time. And so it's kind of like a more lightweight option. They're still registered in the organization's Active Directory. They get registered in as a record in AD and attached to a particular user. So you've got a list of them. They can be rejected or disposed of or gotten rid of out of AD at any time so that device can no longer authenticate. Effectively, what's happening under the hood is a certificate is issued for that device, so that when it wants to get access to things, it presents the cert, and it's kind of a little bit like client certificate authentication that a user may do with a smart card and a browser and things like that. So when the person goes and hits a particular site, that cert can be presented, and it knows that the device has been workplace joined. It can then also still prompt the user to log in, but at least then you know not only who the user is, but what device they're accessing the system from. Now, this can be important if you want people to be able to get access to your SharePoint stuff, but not from some dodgy internet cafe in the middle of nowhere. So you might be okay with them using their Windows 8.1 device, for example, or maybe their iPad. The system might support those devices, so you know it's going to work, and you have a little bit more control over those devices as well, but maybe not from that unreliable, malware-ridden computer in a cafe somewhere. Currently, it supports Windows 8.1 devices, so these can be workplace joined. I'm going to show you a demo of that shortly, and iOS. And as I understand it, at some point in the future, the third ecosystem will come as well, being Android. But today, iOS and Windows 8.1. The nice part about this is, and we're not going to go too in-depth on this particular piece today, is that workplace join is useful for not only this scenario of getting access to things remotely, but also for things like pushing apps down to devices, keeping hold and or having assurances that the data that's stored on the devices is stored in an isolated and encrypted area of the device, so that when the device is remotely wiped, we're not just remotely wiping the entire device, but we can do what's called a selective wipe, which means that it's only wiping the encrypted data and things that came down with those apps, and leaving the person's personal photos on their phone, for example, or on their iPad, or on their Surface or what have you. And so you're able to do the selective wipe, which is really convenient. I don't know if anybody here has had their device wiped by IT remotely before, but it's, you're only as good as your last backup, so to speak. So that can get a little painful. So can be remotely wiped. It also can be useful for not only apps that are pushed down to the phone, but things like VPN settings, potentially. Certificates can be pushed down to these devices using this technique, and some other features and capabilities there. But the one that we'll be focusing on today is just about device authentication, the ability for a device to say, hey, I'm kosher and I'm good to go accessing these systems. So what this looks like, when a machine is not workplace joined and you have this technology turned on, when you go to the login screen here, you'll see that I got an access denied. And if I zoom in a little bit on this screen, you'll see there's a little message there that said, Contoso.com requires you to workplace join your device to access this resource. Now, you noticed, for those of you the astute in the audience, may have seen a note or a little warning when I went to go and log in on my slate that basically said, you may be required to workplace join. I entered my username and password, and I was let through, and that was because I'd already workplace joined my Windows 8.1 device here. But what I'm going to do in a little bit is just show you how that process works, how it integrates with multi-factor authentication, and how it plays nicely with the web application proxy. Okay, in ADFS, to get workplace join set up is relatively straightforward. First, you have to turn it on, and you do this kind of in two steps. First is the Enable Device Authentication checkbox, and I've done this under the Global Authentication Policy in ADFS. So it's this little checkbox down the bottom left-hand side here, and you can see sort of a zoomed-in, expanded version over there. And then what you need to do is, for a particular relying party, you have to say, I need this device workplace joined before authentication can succeed. And so here I'm editing the rules, the claim rules for SharePoint, and I've added a rule that says device registration required. And so I've got to zoom in here a little. And so in the ADFS setup for this rule, there's an incoming claim type called isRegistered user, and that needs to be set to true. Goodness knows why it's called that. Don't ask me, I didn't design it. It's called isRegistered user for some reason. I'm sure there's a good reason why it's called user and not device, but there you go. And that has to be set to true, and then permit access to users with this incoming claim. Right, so I'll be all set at that point. Right, we should take a look at this in action. Actually, one more slide first. All right, we'll take a look at the demo in a second. Extra goodness, so multi-factor authentication support. So Office 365 recently added native inbuilt support for turning on multi-factor auth in your tenancy, so that you may need to get a call or a text message with an additional code to be able to log into Office 365. Lots of folks are doing this today in their own environments. But the important piece here is that you can also use some inbuilt support for multi-factor auth as part of your setup of workplace join, so that when people are adding devices, they can't just add a device if they've got the username and a password, but they need to authenticate through the use of a phone call or a text message or something like that. And I'll show you that in action shortly. So let's take a quick look. In this demo, we're going to look at workplace join, device registration, and multi-factor auth. So what I'm going to do quickly here, if you just give me a minute, I'm going to clear all my cookies on my RT device and make sure there's no sort of remnants of my old login going on over here. Okay, now for this to work, my phone needs to be able to ring. So, oh yeah, thank you. Let's go number 7 again. Okay, so this is my 8.1 Surface RT device. And if you come in to the settings menu in PC settings, down on the left-hand side here under Network, there's a workplace option in the bottom left-hand, the bottom of the left-hand menu there. And currently, I'm joined to this workplace. So the first thing I'm going to do is leave the network, because I want to show you what the process of joining a device looks like, and adding that registration piece of the process. Now I've left the workplace. Let's go back to IE and have a quick look. Let's just make sure it rejects me. Make sure everything's cleared out. Excuse my terrible typing. I'm doing it on the small keyboard here. Whoops. Okay, let's go back and take a look at that auth page again. Oops, thank you. That was about to get embarrassing. Nice catch. Okay, so here we are back at the authentication page, and if you take a look down here, it says access to contosodemo.com. Resources may require device registration. I've got, obviously, workplace join turned on, and so going in and authenticating with it should require the device to be workplace joined. So let me try logging in just as it is, and we'll see if we get in. For my cookies and all my old workplace joins, sometimes I've done a lot of joining and unjoining from using workplace join on this device, and sometimes after a couple of hundred goes at it, sometimes gets its nose out of joint. So hopefully this will go well. Sign in. Boom. Access denied. Okay. So even though I've used the correct username and password for my Active Directory account. ADFS has said, no, sorry, you're not presenting a valid certificate. Get out. So now, what can we do here? I'll close IE. I'll go in and rejoin the workplace. Now, for this, you just supply your email address, and it does some discovery in the background to find out what it should do. I've got my phone. Hopefully, this thing will call me eventually. So I click join. Login first. Sign in. Okay, so now it's basically saying you need to complete multi-factor auth before I'll let you join. And now I've already set up my phone number with MFA, with the MFA service, so it already knows what number to call. If this is the first time you're doing it, it'll go through MFA setup and let you supply, how you want to be authenticated, whether it's, say, a text message or what have you. Okay, so let's click continue. All right, hold on. Getting a phone call. Answer.
Using Microsoft sign-in verification system. Please press the pound key to finish your verification. If you did not initiate, you have been signed in. Goodbye.
So polite. Okay, so what happened there is I logged in, I went through the MFA process, gave me a call on a known phone number that only I should possess, unless I've written my username and password on the back of my phone, which I've heard of people doing, and then it's obviously letting me in. So now it's completed. Now you can see the join button's turned to leave, and in the background what's happened is my device has been registered in Active Directory, tied to that user account that I was using. A certificate's been issued and put down on the device, and I'm all ready to roll. So now if we try going back to IE, and do that again, oh, goodness me. There's my password. Just as well it's not mine. If you try to log in, it's going to call my phone, and I'm not going to hit the pound key. Actually, you can give it a shot if you want. Write down my email address here. The password is quackcon, with a capital Q, a 1, and then an exclamation at the end. And you can give this a nudge on your own tablet and see if you can get in. Right, and it won't be workplace joined, so you won't be able to, hopefully. That's in theory, right? Okay, so I hit sign in. Oh, what have I done? Who's hacked me already? Smart. What have I gotten wrong here? I just fat-fingered it. All right, and so now we're in. So workplace join, we got the cert, it's presented it. It's saying, okay, cool, we've got device auth done, we've got user auth done, so now you can go through to SharePoint. I think that's pretty cool, right? Because now we know what device the person's using, we've got a bit of control over that. We can use it to push down those other assets if we need to, like VPN and Wi-Fi, Wi-Fi config and things like that, as well as, say, when you leave the office, you've got to only use this particular device to get access. You can't do it off your home PC necessarily because we don't trust its patch level or AV or what have you. Okay. What am I at? Oh, here we go, main. Okay, so just wrapping up here. Reverse proxies are alive and well. It's still an absolutely valid technique for getting access externally to internal resources. Obviously, Microsoft have end-of-life UAG, so you have a year of mainstream support, and was it six more of? No, where was it, where were we at? 2020, right? So yeah, out to 2020 for extended support. The web application proxy is not a silver bullet today. There are some features and functions it doesn't currently support that you may rely on, such as URL rewriting for your internal applications. But having said that, you may not. But over time, it'll get more and more features, and more pieces of that UAG puzzle are likely to be filled in. But this is the sort of the first step in a piece of replacement technology for UAG. It is part of Windows Server 2012 R2, so if you go looking for the role in your currently deployed external Windows Server 2012 box, you won't find it. But out of the box with 2012 R2, the released bits back in October, thank you, sir, you'll find the web application proxy under the remote access pieces. But it does rely on ADFS being deployed for auth, for boundary auth. So if you don't already have ADFS deployed, I'm sure it's probably on your radar as a tool that's kind of needed in the quiver for doing all sorts of things now for users externally. And this is yet another good reason to go and do it. And then although not the workplace join functionality, although not necessarily reliant on the web application proxy, it's technically part of the ADFS piece of this puzzle, works really nicely with web application proxy, and the two go really nicely hand in hand together. So with that, I would like to say thank you very much for listening to me babble on for a little while about web application proxy. I tried to make sure we had tons of time for questions, so we have some T-shirts to give away here. If you're too shy to talk at a microphone, then I'll be up front after we're done with Q&A. Or you can shout out a question and I'll repeat it as well. Sorry, I think you were first.
Yeah, is the 2012 R2 ADFS?
So the question was, is 2012 R2 ADFS supported with 365? And I believe the answer is yes. Actually, one interesting point about the new ADFS piece is it does some. There are some schema changes to support device join and things like that. So it's not quite a, you know, just pave it over your old version and go for it. There are some more considerations to bear in mind there. But I believe so. I.
The last version of the system that just got out that had ADFS 3.0.
Great. Right on. Yep. And I say I'm not 100% sure on that because I'm using it in this setup I've got. I also got a 365 tenancy that's using my ADFS box to do the auth. I just didn't want to categorically say 100% Microsoft was supporting it. So next question.
Does that require ADFS 2.1
then versus 2.0? Yes. Yep. So workplace join requires the latest version, yeah. It does some, like I mentioned, it does some schema updates in Active Directory to store those records for the devices, and so yeah.
Would
you like a shirt?
Does WAP support the apps management?
Does WAP support
the apps management? You know, with the dynamic URL.
I'm not sure I understand the question. Sorry.
In apps management, you have those dynamic URL that are created for the apps in SharePoint.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Sorry. So you can do. You're talking about all the GUIDs and the complicated URLs now, aren't you? I need to take that offline and find out for sure.
Good. I'll step by.
Yeah, sure. Sorry, what size would you like, sir? I think these guys are all large here. Medium? Have a squiz at that. Okay.
This is on. I don't know if this is on. It's not on. Should I turn it on? All right, so in a production scenario, I'm assuming that you would have WAP sitting in your DMZ and ADFS internally, and you wouldn't use pass-through authentication.
Right.
So how would you set up the authentication providers for SharePoint? Like, would it have your ADFS instance as a identity provider?
Yes. So the question was, if you've got ADFS and you've got SharePoint, what's the sort of the auth setup for SharePoint if you don't want to do pass-through? And so web application proxy, you would set up to do boundary auth, you know, the ADFS auth, so that when the user hits the box for the first time, they're redirected off to ADFS to authenticate. Mm-hmm. And then as part of the, once they're authenticated, they're issued with, you know, this set of claims and tokens and so forth. That's passed through SharePoint. It still needs to trust your ADFS. SharePoint needs to be set up as a relying party for it to trust what it's already given out.
So the external endpoint of ADFS proxy. Oh,
came on. Now it's on.
How you guys doing? The external URL.
Yeah.
Let's say you have ADFS.contoso.demo.com,
yep.
And that resolves to your internal ADFS. How would you set that up for an external HTTPS ADFS that contains?
That's a very good point. So in my demo here, let me see if I can find this for you. I can't get to my ADFS box right now, sorry. So what I was going to show you is web application proxy also acts as an ADFS proxy, so you can get your ADFS stuff published externally.
So it would have like an external VIP?
Sorry?
It would have like an external, it would resolve
URL.
To your, yeah, got it,
right.
I got it, makes sense.
Right.
Thank you.
This may be a little off subject, but. A
little off subject or on subject?
On subject, off subject,
okay.
At least not SharePoint. With the Windows Server 22R2, does it support the same reverse proxy for link as well? Because one of the things that we use, ISA server and UAG for was just for SharePoint and link, and then that way the Windows guys had something to play with. And
yeah. So the question was around whether you can proxy link and Exchange and that sort of thing using WAP. Like my earlier question about whether it's 100% supported or not yet, it's a relatively new reverse proxy. So even things like SharePoint, there is ongoing work for saying whether it's which pieces of SharePoint you can reverse publish for things like hybrid scenarios where you want to hook search up into the cloud and that sort of thing. My answer goes the same for Link and Exchange. I'm not 100% sure on the Microsoft support statement for them yet, but there are guides on, I found guides on the internet that talk specifically about those exact two scenarios and how to set up WAP for Link and Exchange. I just can't give you quite the legal answer of whether it's 100% supported yet. Sorry, where's that question coming from? Oh, up the back there. Sorry, about support statements.
Yeah, because I feel the same thing that come out. So at some point, you have a matrix of what is supported.
Yeah. Yeah, so I know, for example, the SharePoint team are doing a lot of work right now to do certification and for support statements to say you can publish, search, for example, externally so that you can consume it in a hybrid manner from Office 365, and they're going through those processes as we speak, I believe. That's my recollection of exactly where they're at. So I imagine we'll see more and more support statements come out once the teams catch up to the, and get through all of their testing.
Hi. What are the implications of using Azure rather than a DMZ?
How should I tackle this? We use it for a couple of different scenarios. It's actually a very interesting question because more and more folks are thinking about deploying what would typically called edge services or edge servers in Azure as opposed to in a DMZ, and then using something like site-to-site VPN between Azure and internal to sort of get that internal connection. We use it. We deploy our we have ADFS servers deployed in Azure to support remote offices, things like that. Web application proxy can be, or Windows Server 2012 R2 and the web application proxy can be deployed in the same way. I'm doing it in my demo rig. It's really a matter of on the other side of the VM, so not the external stuff, but internal, how are you going to get back to your internal resources and applications? And that's typically the largest, one of the larger problems to solve first up. Now, there are some caveats to this in that not all software and services and so forth are considered supported necessarily running in a VM in Azure yet. And there's support statements for different products, SharePoint being one of them. So it's there are some implications around those sorts of things. But I don't believe that web application proxy has any issues with support statements running in a virtualized environment in Azure.
Okay, thanks.
No problem.
Sorry if I missed this, but you spoke about how it supported Windows 8.1 and iOS. Are there anything to say about any of the other major platforms?
So I mentioned Android. I know that is being considered and more than likely underway. But right now it's only iOS devices, so iPhones and iPads and Windows 8.1 devices, whether that be Pro or RT. But the support for workplace join and so forth is in 8.1. You can't do it on 8. I don't have an official answer from Microsoft on when other platforms will be supported, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're coming.
But they might be under development.
They might be what, sorry?
Under development, let's say.
Maybe.
Okay.
Hi. Are there any special considerations for deploying with Office web apps?
Office web apps. Now, there was a session right before this, yep. I believe. Did you go to that?
Yes, I did.
So my answer is I will defer to my better colleague on the specifics of the Office web applications. I'm not personally aware of any issues or implications or concerns, whether it's possible or not. I'm not 100% sure. I'm sorry. I'd need to go and talk to him.
Thank you.
He told me he was going to talk about it in a session, so
yeah.
I didn't go to it, but I'd love to hear what he said.
Does the proxy have any of the security features similar to what's in the TMG, like URL blocking or inspecting malicious URLs or stuff like that?
No, so the question is whether all those nice sort of firewall-y type features in web application proxy, and I believe the answer is no, that there's still a requirement for having something either in front of something in front of web application proxy that's doing, everything from traffic management through to those sort of more advanced packet inspection and protocol inspection features.
Do you know anything about the Microsoft roadmap to if they are thinking of implementing it?
Or I don't. I'm sorry.
Launching a similar project, maybe?
No, I don't have an inside scoop on any of that stuff, unfortunately.
Thanks.
I wish I did.
Do you know if there are any extensibility points on the WAP piece to where you can plug in your own logic or get into the pipeline at all?
Not at this point, no.
Okay. And I guess a second question, just as a kind of a side note, do you know, is the reverse proxy supported on core, or do you have to do...
Sorry, is the reverse proxy...
Supported from an install on Windows Core, or do you have to do the full-fledged install?
So which SKU, which server SKU you're talking about?
Or well, just the core install. Like, can you just do a Windows?
Oh, yeah. I believe it's the full-fledged one, but if you give me my card, I can double-check for you and get back to you on that.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm basically not a network guy. I'm a SharePoint dev and a DBA, but I'm asking a question for my network folks.
Gotcha.
So this is scary.
We're on the same plane. Like, I'm in your boat. I'm a developer.
So currently we have we have our SharePoint with clientless VPN for our partner agencies to kind of break in and use our internal SharePoint. We have those users in our own AD, our internal AD. We've registered those users. So the network guys hate that those users are in there, and they hate the clientless VPN part because there's lots of problems and the users can never get connected.
Right.
So is this going to help us? Would we be able to put those external users someplace else?
So I think there's two parts to that question. One is getting your external users out of Active Directory, and the second is whether you can replace your current VPN solution with this. So I think the first part of that is that I'll tackle is the VPN piece. So this, specifically the reverse proxy stuff, is only good for things that are served over HTTP, so web, you know, through a web browser or something along those lines, or from a mobile device that uses HTTP to contact, you know, a service somewhere. It's not good for things like being able to open File Explorer and surf an internal share in your organization.
No, all There's they need other, to do is get to SharePoint.
Other ways to do that, right? So so if all you want to do is proxy something that's web-based, then it certainly would be a good candidate for that. Getting your users out of Active Directory, I'm guessing it doesn't sound like you have ADFS deployed, but there's certainly ways to tackle that with you know, secondary databases or another authentication provider for those external users that ADFS can broker the authentication with. So it would be possible with using ADFS to have them authenticating against a different provider than your internal Active Directory.
Okay, so basically the note is we need ADFS installed. Okay, I think.
It would certainly help.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks.
How you doing? Other than converting classic web applications to claims-based, are there any concerns with using this on SharePoint 2010?
The only concern I'd have with using it again with SharePoint 2010 is, well, there's two things. One, claim support. So
right.
I think everybody's pretty well aware of what works and, well, they're aware of the issues of claims not being 100% cover, you know, features not working 100% coverage-wide with claims in 2010.
Okay.
And so 2013, that obviously gets a whole lot better. And so you kind of have to be in claims mode for this to work really well.
Right.
And so there's that. That's a concern, right? Because there'd be things that won't necessarily work in your SharePoint 2010 environment in claims mode. And then my second point was going to be, let me recall, a support statement. So I'm just not 100%. I don't think SharePoint 2010 has got a support statement that says, you can stick it through this particular reverse proxy.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Hi there. Thanks for the session. It was really good. So my question is it possible to constrain the scope of the workplace join requirement? So I'm thinking like
so
you
can
have
you just repeat that again?
Is it possible to constrain the scope of the workplace join requirement?
Constrain the
scope.
Oh, scope.
So, you know, you've got a domain admin, for example. You want him to workplace join as a requirement, but everyone else, you don't really care, for example.
Yeah, so you can... So the couple of ways to tackle that is you can... I just globally set up workplace join so that everything that goes through ADFS needs to be workplace joined and have the username and password supplied. But you can set it up so that based on what system you're authenticating against or for... it can be turned on and off for that. So it's a bit more granular than my example, which was just global. And then also secondarily, you can apply additional claims rules in various places too. So you can say, well, if your last name is Johnson and then you're okay. You don't need to be device joined. I believe you could do that with rules too.
And that could include an Active Directory group, for example, could it?
Yes, in any Active Directory properties that are available to ADFS to look at, you can set up those rules to be able to query them and write a a small rule that basically says, yeah, it needs to be like first name, last name, email address, group membership, all those sorts of things are included in there.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool, because then you could kind of say, well, if you're a farm administrator, sorry, you're going to have to use a Windows 8.1 device, for example.
Right.
Whereas
right.
Everyone else don't really care so much if they want to use an Android or something.
Yeah, and also you might not necessarily, you might still want people to be able to get access to some low impact system without a lot of secure data on it, without necessarily being on a workplace joined machine, but then take that extra level of precaution for some more sensitive systems.
And that would be on a per relying party basis?
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
No problem. Uh-oh, you did a very good job of not mentioning the dirty word, licensing. I can certainly try and dig up a link that describes what you need for it. I'm pretty sensitive of not trying to give people bad licensing information, so I want to do my homework on that first. Yep. Yeah, so the question here is about load balancing and fault tolerance and high availability. So in my demo, I had a clustered web application proxy setup. So it's I can take one out of rotation and patch it and things. Oh right. Yeah. Yes. No, you stay with your standard SharePoint setup and then put this in front of it. You guys
we don't have questions.
Okay. Yeah, no, I want to get out of your way. Thanks.